It is a very good afternoon. It's Niall Boylan. Kind of feels strange, doesn't it? After 8 weeks of, I know the podcast has been a bit of a mess, particularly over the last 2 weeks. You've had to put up with some recorded ones and replays and all sorts of things. That's because I was busy. I was out in shopping centres trying my best to be a voice in Europe for you. Sadly, I didn't get there in the end. I'm not going to use the word failed because I didn't fail, did I really? I mean, look what I did. Look what I achieved. I was in the top four all the way right up through the counts. I even beat Sinn Féin at one stage. I mean, realistically, we did extremely well, didn't we? Sorry, I didn't knock off my phone there. We did extremely well. And we kept the Green Party out of a seat, which is probably what we did because Ciarán Cough went out before me. So I think we achieved a lot. We could have achieved a lot more. I could talk about it in more detail, but I don't want to waste too much of the podcast. I believe I was treated extremely unfairly by the media, not the print media, by the way, but by RTE. I was treated like a pariah of some description. I was attacked every time I tried to speak. I wasn't allowed on the debate on prime time, which probably would have garnered me an extra 10,000 votes, which could have got me elected, possibly. I don't know. And there's a lot that I learned through the process. You're dealing with machines, political machines. These are political machines with very deep pockets, big organisations, lots of volunteers. And I was up against that. There was only four of us, really. Five of us, actually. And when you think about it, that was all we had to put videos together, go out canvassing. We got some help from some really great listeners, great volunteers who helped us out on the canvas as well, by the way. Thank you very much. You all know who you are. I'm not going to go through naming everybody, but you all know who you were. And thank you so much for all the help that you gave me. Don't forget, by the way, the posters have to be down, of course, by this morning when the council's come back to work. We did try to get every single one of them down. There's always going to be one or two you might forget, or there's one or two that sadly get put back up again by nefarious people to try and get us fined. If you do see any around, please let us know. Just WhatsApp us and we will try and get it taken down as quickly as we possibly can if we have somebody in the area to take it down. We'll always miss one or two. Because there was about 1,000 or so that went up. So please let us know. But I could talk really a lot in detail about the whole thing. Am I going to run for election again? Probably not. No, in the general election. Although a lot of people have asked me to run the general election and be their voice in Ireland. And as much as I'd like to be, I don't know whether I could maybe ask me again in 5 weeks' time. I don't know at this moment in time because it has been, I suppose for me personally, on a personal level, it was a huge anticlimax to some degree because it was stressful. The count was stressful. The social media abuse was something that I wasn't prepared for. By the way, the abuse that I got on social media by some people, but not by all, the majority of people supported me. But some of it, well, most of it, actually, all of it was just lies, absolute, utter lies. And anything, of course, to stop you from getting elected. And it was a good sign, by the way. All that abuse was a good sign because it was a sign that I had people worried. The establishment party and the government were really worried because I rocked their little apple cart for them, didn't I? I mean, of course, Barry Andrews and Regina Doherty would have expected to get the quota, but they didn't because I took 50,000 votes, didn't I? Which means they didn't get the quota right till the end. Eoghan Reardon struggled to get a seat. He probably wouldn't have got a seat if it hadn't been for the transfers from Ciarán Cough, who essentially I put out. So I was the kind of victim of my own success in some sense towards the end on the 19 count. But we did really well. We took a lot of votes from Sinn Féin. Of course, Sinn Féin would have come in higher, Lynn Boylan, but she didn't. She only came in just slightly above me because we took a lot of their votes. Votes for people who want to change. The biggest disappointment for me, the whole thing, was that I spoke to so many people in working class areas in particular who wanted change and wanted immigration dealt with, wanted housing dealt with. And many of you went back and voted for the same people again. Be it Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil or Sinn Féin. And that surprised me. Because when I listened to so many people saying they want to change, and yet you didn't vote for change. Well, some of you did, but not all of you. And that really surprised me. And I described it in RTE during the week, saying my father, for example, was a Fianna Fáil man. And it didn't matter what Fianna Fáil would do. If they blew up the country tomorrow, he'd still vote for Fianna Fáil. And that was probably what happened. I call it Stockholm Syndrome. It'll take time for change, I believe. I think the next general election, we'll see more change. Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are saying that this is the most successful election campaign they've had. That's bullshit. It's probably the worst election campaign they've ever had when you look at the amount of independents who are now in local councils. So it was a really bad election for them. And I think the general election will be even worse. I don't think there'll be any by-elections because I think the general election will come first. But anyway, if you have any questions, you're welcome to ask me when you come on, by the way. But I want to get on with the topic because we could spend all day talking about it. And I'm sure people are going to mention it throughout the topic today. But I wanted to talk about the EU. And the reason I wanted to talk about it was the EU Migration Pact. And I wanted to widen the question. Now, we know, by the way, the EU was established, you know, 1993. And the idea of the EU, of course, originally, which was established, if you think about it, back in 1948, when a group of countries came together, six states actually came together at the time, to try and start a kind of modern European integration. But there's 27 member states right now at the moment. And, you know, they have benefited Ireland. There's no doubt about that. There is privileges and of being a part of something bigger, financially and otherwise, for the citizens of this country. But, you know, we have to give up levels of sovereignty to enjoy those privileges. The EU Migration Pact, of course, is one of those things. And we had MEPs who already voted for the EU Migration Pact before I came along, of course. And I wouldn't have certainly voted for it. But they did. Ireland became, of course, a member state of the European Union in 1973. In 2012, of course, the EU was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. That surprises me, by the way. And the United Kingdom, as you know, left in 2020. There's a population of 448 million people. There was a load of people that said that they had a gotcha moment when I was on prime time on Monday night because I said I wanted an audience of 250 million people. I wanted a platform of 250 million people rather than the platform I have currently at the moment. And they said, oh, Boyle got it wrong. He doesn't even know how many people are in the EU. I was referring to the amount of people who are online, a platform online. Currently, there are over 250 million people online within the EU. Anyway, today we are debating the EU Migration Pact in the Dáil, which will go through more or less, probably most likely this week, because it was voted by the bunch of MEPs we previously sent over, and the bunch that we've just sent over now probably will all agree with it anyway, with the exception of Sinn Féin, who said they disagree with parts of it. The government will next week opt into the pact, which aims to streamline aside the asylum process across EU member states with legally binding processing times, sharing of information about international asylum applicants, IPASs, and efficient returns of unsuccessful applicants. I believe that when I see it. It will require protection applicants to be processed within 3 to 6 months, which is still too long if you ask me, fingerprinting and photographing of adult and child applicants, and the establishment of designated accommodation centres. We could do all of that right now, by the way. We don't need an asylum pact to do that. The full repeal of the International Protection Act 2015 will begin next week, with a raft of new heads of bills expected for the autumn. Accelerated processing times, particularly for the specific cohort of IPASs, International Protection Applicants, who will be placed in mandatory border procedure, will require significant increases in staff to process applications, provide legal advice, upgrade IT capabilities and social work, child protection, medical care and administration. In other words, it's going to cost us a fortune. The mandatory border procedure will apply to those who arrive without documents from the countries where less than 20% of protection applicants are successful and who are flagged on the new EU-wide asylum database, Eurodac, which is already available to us. We just don't bloody use it. Here's the thing. Everything that's in the EU Migration Pact, I was saying during the debates, and I was condemned for saying it. I was called anti-immigration, which is not true, by the way. I'm not anti-immigration. I never was. Everything is there that we could do right now. But the idea is that if it's part of Europe, a part of a European agreement, that the Irish government will be under pressure to do it. I mean, the argument against it is that it would be, I suppose, taking away more of our sovereignty, more control over our own Irish laws. And do we really want to do that? But here's the thing. I want to remain impartial for the period of the next hour or so. As much as you all know, I don't agree with the EU Migration Pact. I want to remain impartial to give other people an opportunity to tell me why they might agree with it. And I suppose the best question to ask then is, as being part of the European Union, which has a lot of benefits, there's no doubt about that. You know, the EU single market environment and the adoption of the EU currency, for example, has been of great stability for Ireland. You know, trading goods, for example, has been a great improvement for Ireland. If we look back, for example, we had a deficit of 340 million in 1973. We now have a surplus of 67 billion in 2022. So there's no doubt the EU has been beneficial to Ireland in a lot of ways. But is our sovereignty an outdated concept? That's the question, really, isn't it, when we talk about the EU Migration Pact? You know, because people talk about keeping our sovereignty. So let me remain impartial for the question and ask you honestly, do you believe that to benefit from the EU and the benefits we get from the EU, is that a sacrifice that we must make as a European country or a member of the EU? That we must say, well, okay, our sovereignty is an outdated concept. We don't have sovereignty anymore. That's just the way it has to be. Let me know what you think. The number is 085 122 55. That's 085 122 55. Is sovereignty, when we talk about the EU Migration Pact in particular, and other things as well, is sovereignty an outdated concept? I mean, you were happy enough, I suppose, to give away your sovereignty when it comes to, say, free roaming, you know, data roaming and phone roaming around Europe, for example. That's one of the benefits of being in the EU, isn't it? We don't have to pay roaming charges anymore. So, kind of, we were happy enough to give away a little bit of sovereignty there and let Europe control those laws. We were happy enough, you know, to give away, you know, to take the money and, you know, improve our roads and stuff like that. That's okay, isn't it? We can let Europe pay for that. We're kind of happy enough to give away stuff there to Europe in relation to that. So why not this? We can't have it every way, can we? Isn't that the argument? Let me know what you think. The number is 085-122-55. Now, I want to go to Nicholas Morris and Edward first, if I can. Nicholas, hi, how are you?
And congratulations on the absolutely amazing effort you and your team put in trying to become elected in that. And I do not see it as a failure. It was actually a great success, considering everything that you were up against, you and all the other independents.
Yeah.
And I won't harp on this for too long, but I'd love you to just to take your time and reconsider going again. And I think one of the things that the key things that was missing was the independents, be they groups or actual independents, you know, they didn't get together and work out a transfer strategy for voting with the people who were going to elect them.
I would agree.
You know, I think, and I actually think you're in a really prime position to maybe host a debate going forward, because I think they need to start working now, because they're going to pull a general election much sooner than we imagine. And you need to be starting.
The problem always was, Nicholas, that when you look at me and say Malachy Steenson, for example, or Philip Dwyer, or whoever it happened to be, who would be nationalist, considered nationalist, right? We all have different degrees of what we agree on and disagree on. And I wouldn't agree with some of the stuff that they would say, and they wouldn't, I'm sure, agree with some of the stuff. Yeah. So, you know, they were probably telling people, oh, don't give Niall Boylan a number two because he doesn't agree with us. And that disconnect of the nationalists' vote, I suppose, was a big problem for us, because I probably should have got more transfers from Malachy. I probably should have got more transfers from Philip Dwyer, but I didn't, which would have helped immensely.
Yeah, but I think that's the learning curve they all need to acknowledge. Like, you know, everybody has their nuanced differences as to what it is means to them to be nationalist and so on. But in terms of actually turning over this government and gaining a majority, they need to collaborate on voting strategy.
Yeah, we need to focus on the strength. And the strength that we had in that election, and I'm not being big-headed, but I say this was me, because I had a bigger platform than all of them. Yep. So that was the strength, and we should have focused on that strength. You know, okay, I don't have to agree with everything they say, but certainly I would have helped them as well. Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. So there you go. But our sovereignty is sacred. I mean, I have no problem being part of the EU. I have no problem with migration. As long, like for example, our government intentionally ignored our laws, our migration laws, in order to facilitate this EU pact. They wanted this to be, you know, the savior of us, you know, and it's not. I mean, I've no problem with us even working with an EU pact as long as we have a sovereign right to deny or reject any decisions made. We have the final veto, so to speak, with regard to our country. And I don't see a problem with holding those two positions, you know. I know other people will be more extreme and say, no, nothing to do with the EU, no pact. But there's nothing wrong with collaborating with the EU in these areas, as long as we have a sovereign veto.
So you agree with parts of the pact, but not all of it, obviously.
All of the ideas are grand.
But here's the thing, Nicholas. The ideas that are within the pact, I mean, we can already do. There's nothing stopping us, you know, having a faster system or faster processing or detaining people who don't have identification and all those things, and deporting people who are, you know, who are not qualified as asylum seekers. There's nothing stopping us doing that right now. So why do we need to be part of a pact to do that? We could have opted out of it.
Well, you could argue that we don't need to be, but we did join the EU, as far as I'm concerned, for economic platform, so to speak. But it's now turned into a militaristic, you know, sort of almost global
diktat. It's a diktat, yeah.
And you know, that's not what, as far as I'm concerned, I've been around long enough, that's not what we signed up for. It was a bit of a scam, to be honest with you, because we were led to believe, you know, we'd all pay the same insurance and taxes and blah, blah, blah,
never
blah.
Happened. Yeah, that never happened. Yeah, you could buy a car in Germany and drive it home. Yeah, that never happened either,
Yeah, but I do think like sovereignty is sacred, and it should be the determining factor in any decisions we
but
make.
But when you say our sovereignty is sacred, but when you say our sovereignty, if the EU is to survive, and I don't know whether it will or not. I mean, Nigel Farage predicted years ago it wouldn't; it'd be gone in 20 years. But if it's to survive, well, then we're part of something bigger, and we're not an independent state anymore, and we don't have sovereignty because the EU essentially wants to control, and they do control 80% of our legislation to some degree.
Yes.
So they want to control; they even controlled our finances, of course. You know, when we had the Troika in back in 2012.
Oh, yeah.
So I mean. So realistically, you know, that's the sacrifice we have to make, isn't it? I mean, I'm only giving you the impartial argument here, by the way. I don't agree with it. But isn't that the sacrifice you have to make?
I understand the position you're taking, and I do think our sovereignty has been intentionally eroded to the point of almost non-existence at this stage, you know. But there's nothing to stop us from taking it back and putting our foot down, so to speak, and standing our ground on certain issues, particularly that affect us constitutionally, our culture, you know, our society and so on. And but our politicians don't seem to have the will or the ability or the interest. I mean, you heard Micheál Martin referring to, you know, this outdated idea of sovereignty, you know, which basically means, you know, he has sold out the idea of Irish sovereignty to one controlled by the EU. We don't need politicians like that, you know. We need people who stand up for this country, and this pact is just a further erosion of our sovereignty.
Okay, well, hang on, stay there, because I want to bring Maurice and Edward in as well. Maurice, hi, how are you?
Good, thanks, Niall. I'd like to congratulate you and your team on your performance. I think you were completely up against the system, and RT did everything they could to undermine your campaign. And I think at towards the end, before the transfers of the Greens, you know, it was neck and neck, and they thought this, you know, you probably could have beaten the system. But I think you should consider running, especially to try and take Éireann or Éireann's seat, for instance. Like, it would be a good big one-up on him, and I'd say you get a bigger vote.
Do you think the people in Dublin Bay North would vote for me now? I don't know about that. If that many of them voted for the Green Party in Éireann O'Riordan, I can't see them. I mean, he tapped the poll in Dublin Bay North in Clontarf, so in the boxes that were open in Clontarf.
But in relation to the European Council, like, it's a completely different... like, only one in two people voted. You have to consider that. Like, there's a much higher turnout in the general election. And people in relation to the general election, you know, there's so many issues that people are voting on, and I think you were limited to what you could really be standing up for. You know, especially when it came to council elections, people are still going to vote for the guy, even if he's in Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, as long as he gets the potholes sorted, does he vote for him.
Yeah.
But, like, in relation to immigration, like, if you, let's say you decided to run in the general election, you picked a constituency in Dublin, that you felt that, you know, you tapped the poll in. Like, in relation to immigration, there's a lot of things you can do that would sort the issue, that you don't have to change anything at the EU level. And one of the things you could do, for instance, is you could say, right, if you come into the country, you're not entitled to social welfare, social housing, and some of those housing schemes, like Bite or whatever. And you have, like, our immigration system would be designed that immigration has to always contribute money and can't take money out of the system. So if you want to get a passport, for instance, it's so easy in this country to obtain a passport, even through the asylum process, people don't know it. Like, we could easily change it to say, right, you have to spend 20 years in this country paying taxes, not being able to take money out of the system.
We already have reasonable laws around citizenship in this country, that you must be here 6 years and never be reliant on the state within that 6 year period for more than a period of time. But those rules have been broken every single day.
Yeah, but like I'm saying, if you put that into the constitution so that government, the left-wing government, can't undermine it and change it without going to the people, then a lot of these people who are coming in for just handouts, a house, a medical care, wouldn't be coming into the country. So, like, if you did a poll, let's say, after your show, I guarantee you get over 90% of people would approve of that. Obviously, the government wouldn't be in favour of it.
But, no, of course they wouldn't.
But imagine the amount of money that we're losing. Like, these people are coming in.
Losing billions every year. And having people come in and being reliant on the state is not good for our economy. But just getting, Maurice, getting back to the question at hand, you know...
In relation to sovereignty, yes.
Is that a sacrifice we have to make to be part of the EU?
In my opinion, I think it's unconstitutional because we're giving up sovereignty, but whenever we do something like that, it has to go to the people in relation to a referendum. And I think, I'm not unfortunately in a position to challenge the government of the High Court, but I know other people are. And I think people like Michael McDougall and stuff should be challenging the government, bringing to the High Court, and they will win if they do it, because mm-hmm. This is unconstitutional in my opinion, because
when you earn your degree online at Arizona State University, you get everything the nation's most innovative university has to offer, the same internationally recognized faculty, the same nationally ranked programs, the same degree. Learn more at asuonline.asu.edu.
Up sovereignty without going to the people. And whenever we gave up sovereignty via the Nice Treaty, via Lisbon, it had to go to the people. The government couldn't just do what some countries in the EU just incorporated the law without going to the people. It had to be voted in relation to Ireland. And
say it has to go to the people, I do believe, by the way, the Immigration Pact should be called, we should have called by the Ireland Ordinary Referendum, right? But in saying that, that won't happen. I can tell you that won't happen. Because I don't think that the kahunas to do that. But, we did, when we signed up to the treaty in the first place and we joined the EU, we did give permission to our government to hand over our sovereignty to Europe. We did do that. We allowed Europe, and we have allowed Europe, and we've benefited greatly from some of that, to take over 75 to 80% of our laws.
Yeah, but and there's a lot of things that we didn't benefit. Like, for instance, since we joined the EEC, now the EU, we've lost over 200 billions worth of fishing since now. Mm-hmm.
We lost another 25% to France, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, and Norway, and we would have our national debt paid off, which is 200 billion, which still hasn't been paid off yet. And how are they going to pay it? No one's talking about. And in relation to what happened yesterday, they had something to eat or whatever up in Croke Park in Dublin. I saw a lot of Sinn Féin faces taking pictures. And the funny thing is, at the same time, they're the fellas then to be attacking the Catholic Church and stuff. Like, a lot of people, working class people, call them Sharia Sinn Féin. And that would be correct in my opinion, because there's a video going.
That thing that happened in Croke Park for Eid, I thought that was only supposed to be during COVID. I thought that was the reason they did it during COVID, but it seems to be now an annual thing.
And I bet you anything they're not paying any cent towards the cost.
But I don't know who's paying for it.
There's a video a few years ago. The Sinn Féin picketed a Catholic church outside Ballyfermot. And they were like, could you imagine them doing the same thing? It was over a gay pride flag. And that actually, the people there, the Catholic people in that area, voiced their concerns to the priest, saying that it shouldn't be there. And technically,
why couldn't they just celebrate it in the huge mosque they have in Clonskee? It's a massive big mosque. It would have been plenty of room up there. I'm curious as to why they're doing it in Croke Park. I don't know why. Anyway, it's a kind of separate issue. But Boris, the thing about it is, you're saying that you don't want to give any more sovereignty to the EU. You believe that we've given away enough. And we should control these laws ourselves. We've given away too much.
And the migration thing is going to cost us a load of money.
Of course it is. It's going to cost us millions, billions.
Like, look at the local elections, for instance. There's a lot of people, nationalists, that didn't get in. And I reckon if they were in areas where there's IPAS centres, I bet you anything. Like, a lot of people, I was hearing from people in those areas, a lot of people were being bussed out and told who to vote for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And you're talking about those IPAS centres having a few hundred people. Like, that could easily change those local elections.
Okay, well, stay there, Morris, for a second. Let me just bring Edward in. I don't want to leave people waiting too long. I do apologise. Sorry, Edward, go ahead.
Yeah, and good morning, Niall. And I echo some of the comments from the previous gentleman in congratulating you and what you achieved up to the election. It really was a travesty. And I have to say, what a rotten bunch of conspiratorial gobshites got in your way. Yeah. You may as well have had a sign in your back that said, I have a ball of virus, when it came to RTE.
I know. By the way, it wasn't just RTE, can I just say. There was a campaign on Twitter as well of misinformation. And a lot of that, by the way, was by people who were working with certain political parties who had started all of that. And it was all just nonsense.
I looked at all of the interviews, and I looked at one particular interview by a certain RTE journalist who I won't mention. It was outrageous, some of the questioning. But look, I think what they've done in hindsight is this. They've done you a massive favour, because come the next general election, by genie, you're going to see a sea change in attitude. And if anything, I will be at the forefront, as several others will, in Western
Europe. Yeah, but Redwood, with the greatest respect, I thought that in the build-up to the 8 weeks of the build-up to the EU election that we were going to see a sea change. We didn't really. Okay, 30% of independents got voted in the local elections. But when it came to the EU, we just sent four people back that we told everybody we despised.
No, no. I accept that, but the sea change I'm referring to is, I mean, who could have anticipated the level of or lack of support for Sinn Féin?
Mm.
Who could have anticipated that? They literally got kicked in the proverbials.
Yeah, and the Green Party as well, but the Green Party were wiped out of Europe. Not just in Ireland, by the way, wiped out of Europe in general.
Well, they were, but I put the question to you online, and maybe I can put it again, I mean, as to why you were so determined to get into the MEP seat. Why not stay at home, Niall, where you'll be, more benefit?
See, and I'm going to, I answered as honestly as I could, mostly, and a lot of people said, oh, is it about the money? Was it about the money? And I'm not going to lie to you, it's an attractive job, absolutely. And by the way, I had a reasonably good job anyway, paying reasonably well in radio either way. But here's the thing, I just felt that I could do more because I felt I had a bigger platform. And I'm not comparing myself to Nigel Farage, but if you go back, say, 10 years ago when Nigel Farage was in Europe, look at the platform he had in Europe and the way he started. You know, now he was obviously anti-Europe at the time, anti-EU at the time, but he had a massive platform. When you've got a platform of 250 million people online or 450, a population of 450 million people, most of those wouldn't be a part of your platform because a lot of them would be kids. But what I'm saying, when you've got that kind of platform, you can do a lot more. And I said that to RTÉ and they kind of tried to embarrass me in some way by saying, oh, you said you're going to embarrass the Irish government. And I said, yeah, you're taking that literally. I can draw attention to the problems within Ireland while I'm in Europe because you'd have a much bigger platform to do that.
That's in your comment, which you said you would embarrass the Irish government, and rightly so.
Yeah.
They've got a reason to be embarrassed, and anybody who highlights some of the inefficiencies that we're seeing over the last 7 months is purely embarrassed. And would be mortified to stand
To answer your original question, that's why I wanted that particular job. That's why I wanted to go to Europe, because I thought on an EU scale, on a European scale, you know, I could do a lot more. I mean, a lot of the things obviously wouldn't be like some of the... Well, mind you, some people say housing wasn't the competency of the EU or of an MEP. It was, because there are directives in relation to Airbnb, there are directives in relation to funding for affordable housing, there are other directives, right? So there could have been some help, but I would have embarrassed the Irish government by being on a big platform. Look, you all know what I'm like for the last 30 years on radio. I'm not shy. I'm certainly not shy on radio or on Twitter for that matter. And I would have been an embarrassment to the Irish government. I would have been a thorn in their side, and that's what I wanted to be.
No, that's what we need, and that's exactly what we want, and may it stay that way. But look, it's only another few more months, and then you may go back at it again, this time with you know, the head down. But to come back to our sovereignty, when we just to repeat what I think Nicholas said there a moment ago, Niall, we relinquished our sovereignty years ago when we gave up our own Irish currency, Niall. I mean, make no mistake about that. All that we have now with this EU packed migration, it was more of the same. I mean, under no circumstances should we permit it. Under no circumstances should we tolerate any more influx of migrants through our doors. It's a nonsense. And this is effectively giving them an open checkbook, carte blanche, to do with us as they wish. That is my opinion at this moment in time.
Yeah, well, yeah, there have been those on the left who are accusing the EU of being anti-migrant because the EU obviously wants to limit numbers, but I don't see that.
We are anti-migrant, and with good reason.
By the way, that was something during the campaign that really annoyed me, that I was referred to by RTÉ and by others as being anti-immigration. I'm not anti-immigration. I never was anti-immigration. I mean, immigration is diversity is a wonderful thing in this country. You know what I mean? We've economically done really well out of it. I'm anti-illegal immigration is what I'm anti. And that's what I've always been anti.
Yeah, but nor do we have the capacity. Let's be frank. We do not have the capacity to take the numbers that the EU are demanding.
No. People are afraid to mention Ukrainians, by the way. We also don't have the capacity for the number of Ukrainians we've taken into Ireland. That should have been, those numbers should have been capped.
Well, I think, you know, if anything as good has come out of the Harris regime is the fact that he has now capped their payments, and he's made this country less attractive to the crowd, but
that's a bit of a farce, Edward, because they got letters. I believe letters are being given now to people who come from Ukraine saying you've 90 days to find your own accommodation, etc., etc., right? And if you don't find your own accommodation, they're not turfing people out on the streets. All they're doing is moving the problem from the Department of Integration to the Department of Social Protection. You go to the Department of Social Protection and you get a rent allowance or you get whatever it is. So they're just moving the financial problem from one department to the other. They're not actually doing anything at all. That was just to make it look good. That's just aesthetics.
Look, it could have been a bit of virtue signalling as well on his part. But as far as I can see, the numbers are down, Niall, mm-hmm. From what I can gather. They're not increasing. We're seeing a lot of empty accommodation blocks now. They're going back from whence they came. And that's all good. But all I'm doing is I'm feeding into the Fine Gael narrative here, which yeah. I'm very reluctant to do. But in the short term, it is having an impact. And it's important that we get back an awful lot of our tourist industry, which has been decimated.
But here's the thing, Edward. Me and you were talking about this now. You know as well as I do, by the end of this week or next week, that'll be voted on. That EU migration pact is going to be voted on. And it will go through.
It's a foregone conclusion as to where that vote's going to go. We will have no say on that. And that is the critical thing here. We have absolutely no say because we gave up that right, you know, when we entered Europe. And, the crowd in the door can do what they like with us.
MEPs that voted for us, the majority of them, are all being sent back to Europe again. So what are the people thinking? You know what I mean?
You've seen what I've written about Maria Walsh and Nina Carberry on the lake. I mean, you don't need
that's to... That's the story with Nina Carberry, by the way. Was Nina Carberry told just to stay quiet for 8 weeks, say nothing, and you'll get elected? I think that's probably what happened there, yeah. The name, just because you're a jockey, you'll get elected.
You couldn't make it up. No. You could not make it
somebody
up.
Tried to put me in the, somebody tried to put me in the same category as Nina Carberry. I said, would you stop out of that? You know what I mean?
Well, look, you could be guilty of moving in company that, you know, is as I said, frowned upon. You know, that's where politicians go to die. Aidan O'Riordan, thank Jesus God we got rid of him because the best place to be is over in Europe.
So some people say they were glad he got voted in. At least we don't have to listen to him anymore. He is kind of insufferable, isn't he?
He is an unsufferable gobshite, and I don't care if he stiffs me for saying so, but he must know an awful lot of Ukrainians because there's no way Dublin or any part of Ireland voted for him.
Well, somebody did. Clontarfy tapped the poll, I think. Okay, but Edward, hang on, stay there because I need to go to Nuala and Billy. Stay there, please, Edward. Nuala, hi.
Hello, how are you? Yeah, supreme power, or that's what sovereignty means. Well, now we've lost that. But we could have had opt-outs. Now, and I voted no twice to the Lisbon Treaty. But, I mean, Denmark had opt-outs, and it still can draw on these opt-outs. So it doesn't have to follow.
We did have an opt-out. We were one of very few countries that did have an opt-out. So we didn't have to vote for it.
Well, yeah, that's it. So we're sending yes people over.
Well, that's it. Yeah, we're just doing that. We've just done it again. You could have sent a no person over. I'm a no person.
No. And, apart from that, it's another programme, really, but so many people I know have had two votes. I myself got two polling cards.
Oh, I remember you telling me that. I remember you telling me that, yeah. But that is something that has to be sorted out, you know, the whole efficiency of the voting system and the registration system. But they are building a central database now. They're putting, because there is five different databases or something.
But I was talking to a guy in Park House in Galway, and I was talking to him, and I said, did you vote? And he was from Wexford. And he said, no, my vote is down in Wexford. And I said, well, you could have voted online. You could have updated your stuff online. And I said, if you wanted to, you didn't have to take... you're not obliged to tick the thing that you have a vote down in Wexford. So you could actually have two votes.
I know people who have two votes because of two different addresses. Yeah. But Nuala, getting back to our sovereignty, can I ask you just quickly, our sovereignty, because I'm running out of time here rapidly, do you believe that, you know, it's being part of the EU means essentially we have to sacrifice our sovereignty?
It does. It does, of course. Anyone that thinks it not is a kind of a, you know...
You're delusional.
Of course it is, because the EU law, any law passed in the EU, we cannot do anything that is adverse to EU law.
No.
You know?
Unless it goes against the Constitution.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you cannot change your own laws without them being in compliance with the EU law, of course you don't have sovereignty. That's just trick.
So in other words, arguing for sovereignty and arguing and saying we should be keeping our sovereignty is nonsense as far as you're concerned, because we're part of the EU. That's just the sacrifice we've made.
And all these carrying kind of, we'll say, Sinn Féiners, they won't face that. I mean, because that's what they're all about, a sovereignty, aren't they?
Well, they claim to be, but I don't believe they are, but they claim to be.
Because if you were really intent on sovereignty, you'd say, well, no, we have to make our own laws. Because the laws have to be, it's by the people, and for the people. It's not for the, you know, it's not the other, it seems to be the other way around. They're making laws, and they're making more and more laws every day. So the burden falls on the people on the lower incomes. The others can go wherever they want to.
Okay, but in relation to the
money around.
In relation, just finally, in relation to the EU Migration Pact, okay, most likely it's going to go through in the next week or two. It will be voted for in the Dáil, probably. I mean, I know it's been discussed today at 3 o'clock in Leaders' Questions. I mean, do you think Ireland, I mean, will benefit at all from having a kind of central system that deals with the processing of immigration, both in Europe and Ireland, together as part, you know, of a grouping rather than doing it individually with our own laws? Will we benefit from that, or do you think we'll lose out?
I think we'll still be doing the same old thing, because, you know, this idea, like, of, I was told that this, I know this social housing is vacant, and I was onto the council about it, and I was told, well, we can't fill it now at the moment because it's Garda vetting is holding it back. No, if we can't even do the, what you call, an empty apartment, which everybody would be looking for, and that's new heating and new doors, and we can't get somebody in there because of Garda vetting. What the heck can we deal with anything else?
All right, okay, thank you for that, Luna. Let me just go to Billy. Billy, hi, how are you?
Hello, Niall, how are you?
Good, Billy. Billy, I mean, I hear people going on about sovereignty, and that was the main thing that people talked about over the 8 weeks. But I putting my impartial hat on me, if we're part of the EU, which we are, and we signed up to it, I mean, why are people giving out about sovereignty? Surely we realise we're part of the EU. You went out and voted for your MEPs there last week. So that's the sacrifice you have to make. Bye-bye, sovereignty.
That would be an ecumenical matter, Niall, wouldn't it? look, Niall, sovereignty, I'm sure there's many, many definitions of sovereignty, and anyone who's called in here today will have a definition of sovereignty. And being able to act individually in a foreign policy realm is a form of sovereignty. When we joined the European Economic Community in 1973 and then voted on Maastricht in 1993, we had the undertaking that we would give up elements of our sovereignty. We've done that. We entered into this agreement with our eyes open. So I don't see why people are now complaining about it.
Well, I suppose they're complaining about it because they feel we've already lost enough of it. And I suppose I talked about immigration during the 8 week campaign. That's something that's very visible. And the reason it's visible is because you see tents on the canals and you see people being put into IPAS centres or into accommodation centres. So it's a very visible problem. Unlike other things, which are reasonably invisible.
That's not the EU. That is illegal migration. The two things
absolutely,
are,
but that's why they look at the EU Migration Pact and they say, we don't want more of that. So can we stop this now? And they see that Europe is taking control of that.
The EU Migration Pact is an attempt to stop this happening.
Well, it's an attempt to fast-track it, isn't it?
Well, it's to fast-track the processing of people coming into the European Union, yes. It's also to put in a database to track people who come in.
But it also says as well, they will detain people who don't have identification. That's part of it as well.
Yes.
By the way, we should be doing that anyway. But
I hear over the election campaign and for the last 2 years, I've heard unvetted migrants, unvetted military-aged males. And by the way, military age for males is age between 18 and 65.
Yeah, it's quite a broad spectrum, isn't it?
It's a broad spectrum. And also, you know, you can have military-aged females as well. So, you know, it's a broad spectrum, a broad demographic that's being used there. But it's just a buzzword.
But the unvetted thing is reasonably sound in its description. I've heard so many governors
Well, okay, Niall. So what is the expectation here, that every person that comes into this country will be Garda vetted? Is that what people are?
No, I don't think they're talking about being Garda vetted. When we talk about vetted, first it's identifying who somebody is. That's a start, isn't it?
But who does that?
Well, it would have to be done through Eurodac. It would have to be done through fingerprinting. It would have to be done through a Garda Síochána.
Exactly. So that is as it stands right now, Niall, it would be the guards that do it.
But they're not doing it.
Oh, Niall, would you let me finish?
You're getting into
the political forum already. Like,
I know, I feel like I'm in that debate in Drive Time again. Yeah, go on.
Right. But Niall, you see, without the EU Migration Pact, that is under the auspices of an Garda Síochána to do that vetting. To do that vetting, the guards need to have valid documentation, and the person that has come in will have to tell them where they came from and where they have traversed through, which they may not do. At least under the EU Migration Pact, this will be done at the point of entry, and people will be detained at those borders if they do not provide documentation and identification. So there are elements of this EU Migration Pact which people in this country have been calling for the last number of years, but it's become a bogeyman to beat the political establishment with that we're signing up to it.
But is it a referendum, Billy,
on everything that the government does?
But it's already in our statute books that if somebody enters this country with no documentation, you're breaking the law. So it's already on the statute books. So, I mean, we do have a perfect right if somebody enters with no identification to arrest them and remove them from the state.
Clearly, Niall, the Irish government and the Irish establishment have not enforced the laws that have been on the statute book in this state. That is the issue. It's not Europe that tells them not to enforce these laws. That is a decision that is made at a local level.
Yeah, but the point so, I'm making is, the only point I'm making is when you talk about the EU Migration Pact and all those benefits that you've just outlined, which they clearly are benefits, we could be doing that anyway.
We could be, and we should be, but we're not. And now the European Union is saying, well, Niall, to be completely honest with you, I would have a lot more faith in the abilities of Eurodac and Euroforce to do the vetting at the borders of the European Union than I would for the Irish government to do the vetting and the intake on the Irish borders, because obviously our government have allowed the situation to develop that has developed on the canals in Dublin and elsewhere by not checking where these people are coming from and not checking that they are who they say they are. So let's let Europe do it if they're volunteering to do it for us.
Okay, well, do me a favour, Billy. I do want you to stay with me. I want to go to Morris High and Steve which in a second. Morris High, how are you?
Oh, how are you doing? Listen, we had an old saying in the army. You only lost the battle, you didn't lose the war.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to use the word I failed, because I don't think I failed. I think I achieved something.
Oh, you did. You embarrassed them into this. But I tell you one thing I noticed. When you were at the town centre and Aidan O'Riordan was announced as going through, the cameras were in around you, right?
Yeah.
What I spotted was two Fianna Fáilers going over to him and patting him on the back and congratulating him, which I've never seen before these two parties, because now the rumour monger machine is going saying that Fianna Fáil and Labour are in talks at the moment secretly about when the next election comes, they're going to get together and take power.
Yeah, well, I can see Labour and the Social Democrats joining forces anyway. So, I mean, yeah, you're going to see a lot of changes.
Yeah.
But mind you, maybe they were patting him on the back because they just didn't want to see me getting elected.
Well, it wasn't that. It was because, tell you what, one of the Fianna Fáilers, right, when he saw the cameras were at the caption, he legged it.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
I'm sorry, your phone is making a funny noise. But, Morris, just getting back to, just very quickly, in relation to sovereignty, Billy says, you know, we signed up to the EU, we signed up to the agreement. You know, obviously we didn't sign up to give away all of our sovereignty, but certainly we did sign up to allowing the European Union, you know, bring in directives and laws that govern our state, and we just have to accept it and take the good with the bad.
Yeah, and like I said, I heard the lady speaking earlier on. She was really true, because she said she brought up the point about the Lisbon Treaty and the Maastricht Treaty, which we rejected, and they kept at us until we got us. So
we didn't reject
Maastricht over here. Yeah. They pumped in millions.
They did change it before they put it back to the people, by the way. They did change it. It wasn't just a case of putting the same one back to the people again. They did actually change it.
Yeah. Well, we got a sort of a bit what we wanted. But the only thing is, look, they pumped millions into this island. And then when they realised how much that we got out of the pot, and they said, hang on a minute now, we have to reel these fellas in and tell them what to do and where to go. And that's what's going on. So, you know, at the end of the day, we're only a small island off the main land of Europe, and you sit down there now, little paddy, and do what you're told and keep your mouth shut and say nothing.
We're a small island, maybe physically and geographically, and a population is small, but financially, you know, we are important as part of Europe.
I did, to a certain degree, but I'll tell you one thing. The thing that really got to me was when this country went bankrupt in 2008, right? Every bank in Europe pumped money into this country at cheap rates. And then the country went belly up and they said, hang on a minute now, you're a member of the EU, your taxpayers are going to take the bill. You won't take a hit on anything. Mm. And that's why young people had to leave this island. That's why my grandchildren are growing up in England. Because they gave the two fingers to the young people and said, there's nothing here for you. Back off and go and live somewhere else.
Well, there are two arguments in relation to whether we should or shouldn't have bailed out the banks at the time. I mean, I get torn between the two.
You take a risk, and the risk was guaranteed.
Iceland, for example, didn't bail out their banks. But then again, Iceland is a tiny population.
Argentina bailed out. They didn't pay their debts. Now, that's getting on, but they're a poor country, but they kept their finger to the people that get the money out.
Well, there are different ways of looking at it. I don't know. I think, to be honest with you, at the time, it was probably the better thing to do. I mean, don't get me wrong. We shouldn't have been in that position in the first place. We shouldn't have been in that much debt anyway. Anyway, thanks. Sorry, Morris. It's just your phone is making a lot of time. And by the way, Morris, just very quickly, thank you very much indeed for your assistance and volunteering to help us. You've been really great.
Yeah, grand. No worries. I enjoyed it. It was an eye-opener for me and you gave it the best shot. Like I said to you, you only lost round two. Bring it on. All right?
All right. Thanks, Morris. Appreciate it. Let me go to Steve.
Bye-bye.
Steve, how are you doing? Steve, I was
saying... Well, Noel, how are you?
You're kind of agreeing with Billy that, you know, to be part of the EU, we have to sacrifice... our sovereignty.
Okay, so let me just start off by saying that there's not very much that I can say outside of what Billy has said. You know, at least at an EU level, we can ensure that these laws are adhered to. You know, the likes of being stopped at the border and if they have no documentation that they could be detained, all that type of stuff. I completely agree with that. Now, I'm going to do something that I never usually do on your show, Niall, which is go off on a tangent, which has very little to do with the topic.
Oh, spare me.
No, just bear with me. Bear with me, because I'm on your side on something here, Niall.
Okay.
I am extremely pissed off with the Irish people. And when I say extremely pissed off, to the point where I genuinely, hand on my heart, the house that I only bought, my dream home, I've put up for sale. I'm getting the fuck out of this country, because I thought... that the Irish people would have been behind somebody like you. But unfortunately, they voted for more of the same arseholes into power. Now, whatever is coming down the track, Niall, whatever is going to come down the track, the Irish people deserve it. Those people who voted for them deserve the crap that's coming their way. It's a snake eating its own tail. This country is screwed, absolutely screwed, and I'm out of here.
Yeah, but a large percentage didn't vote for them, in fairness. You know, I got 50,000 votes, which wasn't embarrassing by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, with transfers, a large percentage didn't vote for them. Initially, in first preferences, over 8.5% didn't vote for them, Well, there you go. I was actually dying to hear what Steve had to say, but unfortunately, we have a slight technical issue here. We've just lost Steve, we lost Billy, we lost everybody. We were coming to the end of the podcast anyway. Don't forget, we will be back again with you tomorrow, the usual time, 12 o'clock. We'll sort out our technical issue and we'll get everybody on who we plan to get on today. In the meantime, by the way, don't forget, by the way, you can donate or subscribe to our podcast at www.nileboylan.com. That's www.nileboylan.com. Join us again tomorrow at 12. Until then, have a great day.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.